This is the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, from New Moon Rising Wrestling. Have you ever dreamed of having your birthday party inside a professional wrestling ring? Well, now is your opportunity. You've seen the rest. Now it's time to experience the best. At New Moon Rising Wrestling's birthday bash birthday parties, we don't just offer unique and affordable party options. We create memories that will last a lifetime. We offer three outstanding party packages. All packages include great photo opportunities with the wrestlers and real championship belts, along with fun in a professional wrestling ring. For more information, go to nmrwrestling.com or call 609-820-2793 for the New Moon Rising Wrestling Birthday Bash.
Blog Talk Radio.
If you build it, he will come.
People will come, DJ. They'll come to Delaware for reasons they can't fathom. They'll turn into your long driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around and say it's only $10 per person. And they'll pass over the money without thinking about it, for it is money they have and peace they lack. And they'll walk off to the bleachers, and they'll sit in their short sleeves in the perfect afternoon, and find they've reserved seats somewhere along the ringside, where they sat when they were even younger, and cheer for their heroes, and they'll watch the matches, and it'll be as though they dipped themselves in magic blood. The memories will be so thick, they'll have to brush them away from their faces. People will come, DJ. The one constant through all the years, DJ, has been professional wrestling. America's rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But wrestling has marked the time. This farm, this ring, is part of our past, DJ. It reminds us of all that once was good and that could be again. Oh, people will come, DJ. People will most definitely come.
Blood, pride, survive. You're taking your bones to break in. Yeah. Like the knife and like the tribes, they come to battle on this night. The ring of fear, the fear of the war, that's where they lay the law.
Lay the law, once again, prepare for war.
Find me, of course, at Folsom County. And that was an epic intro done by Dan Colachico. And it was about Tournament of Death.
Yes, sir. Yes. And the trials and tribulations there within.
People
will come, DJ.
People will most definitely come to this field.
Follow me on Twitter at DanLong83. To this field in Delaware.
Yes. People will come to Delaware for reasons they can't fathom.
I've heard that.
Oh, and with us from the very start to discuss a very disappointing UFC 161 a little bit later on, is Omega Squad Chris Green. How are you tonight, sir?
I am fine, folks. Follow me at Omega Squad on Twitter.
I know you're doing better than Dan Hendo Henderson.
Is he dead?
No.
No. Well, Dan Henderson is doing better than James Gandolfini, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm glad
you went there.
I'm going to... Well,
use it out in the asshole.
Yeah, that was a role reversal we had right there.
Yeah.
I would like to think that Gandolfini would appreciate that.
Well, you know, after his meal.
Yeah, well.
Did he have a good last meal? Who knows? Okay, Dan, there was the line, and you distinctly crossed it. Now.
That's how he breathes when he does.
Read the blog at HIAC Talk Radio. You can follow us on Twitter, HIAC Talk Radio. You can like the Facebook, facebook.com/HIAC.
After that last segment.
HIAC Talk Radio. And I'll tell you what, we got a good show planned for tonight.
We do.
What do we have on the show, Dean?
It is going to be MLJ and Anthony Graves. Of course, they were two names from a promotion that perhaps died too early. NWA Force One, of course, in South Jersey was one of the most recognized promotions. And we're going to talk to them about their experiences, also how they broke in and what they're doing now. I can't wait.
I know where some of these guys are doing now.
Well, yeah, Anthony's all around. I think his home promotion would be BWO, but we'll ask. MLJ is, of course, involved with CZW.
Chrissy Calzone.
Yeah, it's Chrissy, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It is who you think it is, Dan.
Nice, sweet.
Of course, we're going to talk about Heat Wave.
My favorite referee's there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Spanky 123 was an official with NWA Force One. Maybe that's where he got the patch. We'll ask.
I was going to say, did you guys give him a patch? Because that's all I see is that patch.
It's larger than his rather rotund head.
He thought I was a referee this weekend for another... You doing PWS this weekend? I'm like, what?
Next
Saturday, right? No, because I was so confused. I was like, huh?
You should have said, yeah.
Pick me up. Here's my address. The GPS will get you there. Don't go through Washington.
Indeed. So we're going to have that, but Dan, right now, I have a surprise for you and every listener out there.
You're retiring?
No. Here we go.
One man can make a difference.
The views and the opinions expressed by the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, are not those of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio or New Moon Rising Wrestling.
Is what he says about McMahon and these other guys, the promoters screwing around with these guys, is this true?
Let me tell you something. If there was a union in professional wrestling where a guy had to get up and show some wrestling holds, guys like him would never get in wrestling in the first place.
America.
Guys like this guy right here wouldn't get in wrestling in the first place.
Right.
Because I'm going to tell you why right now. Schultz was in Atlanta. 1975, 1976, I was in Charlotte. You were on top. I was training Tony Atlas. His first week in wrestling, he made $900.
He got pushed because he was black.
You were black, and I was a better wrestler than you, which is reverse discrimination, and I didn't get the job because you were...
right, it's been 6 long months since we last heard him on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. Without further ado, it's time to ride again. It is the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, coming back to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. How the hell are you, Robert?
I'm fantastic. You know, it's a history-making night in the history of professional wrestling, and what better place for it to go down than right here on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Woo-hoo! Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Now, Robert, before we get anywhere, I want to say that I finally got something that I wanted in New Moon Rising Wrestling. Next month.
You know,
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, speaking of getting what you wanted, as far as I'm concerned, what happened to you and Mr. Joe Gacy? Because the Knight Rider has been keeping an eye on things. The way you eliminated Tank Tolan finally from New Moon Rising Wrestling, this tournament shouldn't even be going on. The belt should have been handed to both of you that night for doing us all a favor.
I had it up until the show. I had it up until Heatwave.
I saw him holding it and, you know, cleaning it off and keeping it safe and.
If anybody knows about belts being taken from them unjustly, it's me. So I can give you some advice on how to cope with that.
Yeah, it is a difficult coping process that I've been having. Now, Robert, next month, Brady Hicks, he can't make it. He put in his 30-day notice. He can't make it. So I reached out to the board. I said, there's only one man who can make a difference in New Moon Rising Wrestling at that commentary table, and that is you. Robert Knight, you are part of the commentary booth next at Crowning Glory.
That's right. And you know something, Dean? As of about 22 seconds ago when you just started that announcement, Crowning Glory is now the hottest-selling DVD in New Moon Rising Wrestling history, and that's just based on pre-orders alone 34 seconds ago.
It must be freezing the website up.
Probably is. Now, Robert, what have you been doing? I know you've been getting in better shape. You want to talk about that for a minute or two?
I have. You know, first of all, we go back to the suspension. You know, everybody knows the story. The Roughneck, he was going to have his career ended at the hands of me, and I think the board saw it coming, and they liked the way that he deals with these little kids and his fairy tale world of birthday parties and things like that, so they didn't want me to hurt the guy. They suspended me. All right, that's fine. I can deal with the suspension. What's it going to be, 30 days, 60 days? It seems like they wanted it to go on forever. I never heard from the board of directors ever again. And, you know, me being the kind of guy that I am, Kit and I stay on top of things. Now, what we discovered is, as of midnight tonight, I am officially reinstated by default in New Moon Rising Wrestling because in the contract, it states any suspension can only take place for up to 6 months, and at that time, said wrestler must either be terminated or reinstated. And since the board hasn't reached out to me as of midnight tonight, I am officially 100% reinstated in New Moon Rising Wrestling, and I'm going to finish a lot of what I started.
Now, go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
Damn it.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. Let me talk. I think you won by default on that one because Donnie doesn't know how to do paperwork.
I mean, he's just worried about getting that suit and tie nice and straight so he can get in the ring and play his puppet act. But he's going to get his, too. And as you mentioned, speaking of me getting in better shape, you know, not only am I catching bad guys on my time off, we busted a whole ring of Q-tip thieves out in Cincinnati a while back, but Kit has introduced me to DDP yoga. So in between catching bad guys, I've been doing some serious DDP yoga. And all joking aside, I have lost 17 pounds already. And by the time you guys see me, I'm going to be 20 pounds lighter than I was 6 months ago. In the best shape of my life, the Roughneck won't even be able to keep up with me.
He couldn't keep up with you before.
I was going to say, in trouble.
That's true. That was a bad example, I guess.
That was a bad example now. So what else has been going on? I mean, Q-tip thieves. I mean, how have you been keeping your mind and your body ready for the eventual comeback?
I mean, I've been studying. I've been keeping up with everything that's going on. We have a lot of new faces in New Moon Rising Wrestling. Some disappeared. Speaking of disappeared, there was a slot that was open, a mystery man, to fill in that tournament last week, and I thought for sure that was going to be my reinstatement, but again, that's New Moon Rising Wrestling holding me back.
They're
holding me back worse than the guy who they were holding back who called out of that tournament. What a fool he was.
I knew it was coming. So that's the first cannon shot fired by Robert Knight. Now, is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Because I know you, for 6 months, you really haven't been out there. The fan mail has kind of been silent. Do you have anything else you want to get out there about anything else?
You know, I've had so many demands to bring back fan mail, bring back fan mail. I had to take a break from fan mail because as much as I adore my public, the people that support the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, I didn't think that it was right for me to continue to send those episodes of fan mail to New Moon Rising Wrestling when they weren't sending paychecks to me and they had me sitting out in the soup lines suspended. So I put it on hold. I was contacted by an organization of a great group of guys who are going to be the future of free entertainment. Now, this announcement is another shocker I'm going to make tonight. This Friday is going to be the first ever Free Entertainment Friday from Moose Knuckle Entertainment, and it will be the return of the all-new fan mail with Robert Knight.
Well, so we have not only you reinstated to New Moon Rising Wrestling, not only will you be joining me at the commentary table for the next event, Crowning Glory, coming up July 20th at the Proving Grounds, 1030 Delcy Drive, Deptford, New Jersey. But you're also going to have a new episode of Fan Mail. Now, what did you cover on this? Can you give us a little teaser?
A little teaser. I mean, we did something a little bit different this time. As many letters as I get each and every day, we decided to move away from the letters, and this first episode is going to be all Twitter questions that were sent to me from various celebrities, friends of mine from all over the world, and I do the best that I can to answer them honestly as I do from the beginning, because I think the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, my appeal to everybody is I'm the perfect mix of fantasy and reality, and I think that's what's going to come through with the all-new fan mail.
Now, have you been keeping up with anything else going on in South Jersey?
I have, and that was a great introduction that you guys gave me there coming in. You know, I've been keeping up with the hottest organization going, New Moon Rising Wrestling. I've also still been keeping tabs on those other guys down there, the guys who want to keep professional wrestling unionized and all white, and everybody will be happy.
I was about to ask you how you know.
I mean, what does that say about that?
I was white, and because you were black, nobody had me back. When did he become Southern?
Well, he was
forget about the fact that I couldn't work my way out of a paper bag, bud.
I made
Tatsumi Fujinami do his finisher 3 times in Shea Stadium before I put him over because I couldn't bump right, bud.
That is a true story, Dan.
Oh, my God.
This is true.
Yeah, showdown at Shea. Everybody check that out on WWE Classics.
You don't have to tell me that's true because usually when Robert talks, it's pretty true.
Exactly. And you know something? Like I said, I can be suspended for 6 months, but I'm still loyal. And that's what nobody can take that away from me. People can say what they want in professional wrestling. There's a difference between guys who want to get themselves over and guys who are loyal to a company that they believe in. And that's the difference between somebody who sits on the shelf 6 months and doesn't work anywhere to a guy who leaves the building after the first match still in his gear and drives 10 minutes up the road to perform for somebody that's still a friend of his. That's the difference. That's where loyalty lies in the business.
I tell you, every time I drive up from Virginia and I drive past that certain exit with that word, the P word on it, I feel dumber when I drive through.
Yeah, it was. I used to... Years and years ago, I used to drive through that town, and it was a dump then, and I can only imagine it's gotten worse.
Man.
I
responded to a fire there once, and I couldn't tell which house was on fire.
That's anyway. How they redecorate in Paulsboro. That's what you call Jewish lightning, bud.
I do have a caller.
Oh, God.
Let me get them on. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room on WDMD Philadelphia, thebradyhicks.com. What's going on?
How are you, Brady? Do you have a question for Robert?
Brady, what do you think about
It's not so much a question, but, like, my God, is it good to hear your voice, man. My God.
I appreciate it. And you know something? I'm going to do my very best to make sure that they don't make me a permanent replacement for you, Brady, because I know that you put in your 30 days, so that should be job security. But I'm going to do the very best that I can to entertain the people and keep that seat nice and warm for you, because you know it's going to be a hot seat if I'm sitting in it.
Well, you know what? I'm sure you're going to do a fantastic job there. And I can't wait for the career opportunity. Dean was telling me all about this brand extension, New Moon and Wildwood on that day, July 20th. I'm going to be in Wildwood. I'm going to be there to call the action right there for New Moon on that day.
Yeah, you know, we're looking forward to that, too. We just want to make sure if it's 90-degree weather, you got to make sure you do your best Bobby Heenan impression and get in that swimsuit.
Well, it'll look like I was swimming for sure, but it'll be a good time.
I don't know what that means. Brady, do you have anything else?
Yeah, he was referring to...
I also wanted to say I called in not knowing that Robert was going to be on the line, and that's great, but I just got out of the PWI 500 meeting, and I just wanted to tell you guys.
You put me on there?
No, I think we lost him.
All right, I think he did that on purpose.
I think he was being witty.
Listen, it's been one of the hottest trending items. As a matter of fact, right now, Robert Knight just topped James Gandolfini on Twitter trends right now. So I can only imagine that's going to help my chances on the PWI 500.
I hope they don't think you're dead, Robert.
That is true. So, Robert, there is a lot going on, and I'm telling you, I'm so excited, not only for your return to the Proving Grounds, but the return of a fan mail coming up on Friday. Ugh.
People can find that, as a matter of fact, on YouTube. Do a search for Moose Knuckle ENT, and you will find it. There's a couple videos up there that the guys have been working on already, and that's where you're going to see. We also have a Facebook page if you search for Moose Knuckle Entertainment. And, of course, I want to make a big, big announcement here. I'm sure, I know it's been 6 months, but you guys know about the hottest-selling 8x10s in wrestling history.
Yes. Yes, the hottest-selling 8x10s.
My comeback, my reinstatement, I'm going to run a special deal on these. They're only going to be $5 or 2 for 10 on the signed 8x10s, and I'm only 4 Twitter followers away from crossing the 200 mark. Should be 2 million, but it's going to be 200. When I get those 4, I'm going to have a contest, and I'm going to give away one of those signed 8x10s to anybody except Joe Hale and Captain Dave.
Well, they don't deserve it, really.
Now, Robert, where can people follow you if they want to keep up with all these announcements and all these exciting things coming up from the Knight Rider?
You can follow me at @RobertKnight_. Send your questions in. You could have it featured on a future fan mail with Robert Knight. Any questions you might have, the one thing you can't say about me is that I'm 100% honest all the time, as I proved again here tonight. And I just want to thank you guys for having me back. It's been too long, but it feels like I never left.
Hell yeah.
It really does feel that way. And, of course, that's that's crowning glory. You will be there at the commentary table. Brady Hicks, of course, will be down in Wildwood for the co-branded NMRW show that's going on right off the board.
You need to tell me more about this later.
Oh, I will.
Okay.
I think he's trying to sell some tickets for closed circuit down there in Wildwood as well. So good luck with that, Brady.
Good luck with that, Brady. But, Robert, I don't know when we'll talk again on this show, but thank goodness we talked tonight. So
See you later, bud.
Yeah.
All right, bud. Make sure you get those payments in.
Not only that, what is the catchphrase, my friend?
It's not a catchphrase. Dean of credibility, it is a way of life. You guys know, and everybody else knows, that one man can make a difference.
You have a good night, Robert.
You too, guys. Take care.
Oh, the return of the Knight Rider, coming back to the Proving Grounds where he rightfully belongs. And, wow, I can't even tell you how many. I didn't even get a chance to tell him that Aaron Gainey will be here next week. So, I was going to, but so much was going on. So.
Are we announcing that?
I just did, Dan.
Next week, Aaron Gainey.
So, Aaron Gainey, of course, formerly of the Nigerian Nightmares. And you will recall that Aaron Gainey's last appearance
went well
on this program. He uttered a phrase that became kind of another catchphrase. I mean, so many things were born out of that.
The Dean of Credibility.
The Dean of Credibility was, of course, born out of Aaron Gainey's last appearance, and I did thank him for that last I spoke with him. So
he's doing well, actually. I'm actually very. Well, that was a shocker.
Well, when you consider. Let's go into the story. And then
sure, let's do it.
We'll get into UFC. He showed up, of course, at Heatwave.
Well, I kind of got nervous because he showed up with a certain shirt on of a racist guy who, you know, doesn't like black people making more money than him.
It's reverse discrimination, Dan. I don't
It's reverse discrimination!
But go ahead. Continue with your story.
And I was like... And he came in with, can I tell him who he came with, or?
Who did he come with? Oh, no, he came with Luis.
Yeah, Luis the Punisher.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, what's going on? Does Jake know you're coming? Because I didn't want to say, you can't come in with that shirt!
You should have, and just watched the reaction.
Yeah, get out of my way before I kill you. And he said, yeah, where is he? I was like, hold on, let me go get him, and. You know, he made his way in. I said, Jake, Aaron Gainey's here. He's like, let him in. And I brought him in, and he went right to Jake. He said hi to a couple guys, went right to Jake. He was in there for like 2 hours.
Yeah. He did come out to commentary.
Oh, that's right. I was there. He just came out, and he was part of commentary. So
I noticed that there was a large eclipse of the sun, shall we say, as he came over to me. And
yeah, because all of a sudden, this big... And I'm not making fun of him. He's just a big guy, but all of a sudden this wall overcomes you.
And I turn and I'm like, oh, because I've been, of course, you know, around, I've been saying that the Nigerian Nightmares have not been there since Don Warren suspended them. And, of course, there's one Nigerian Nightmare coming through the curtain. So I don't know.
Shared at that point. But there's a lot of things apparently that have gone down. And I guess we'll be talking about a lot of this next week.
Well, who gets the exclusive, Dan?
Hell in the Cell Talk Radio does, baby.
That's right.
Because we are... Because
you're
helping,
Dan.
Because we're... Okay. Because we know how to talk to, you know, the people.
That is true, but right now I'm going
to... Interview, I love you. Blah, blah, blah. No, you don't do that.
No.
You don't do it that way.
We talk to people.
Man, we just, you know, chat. Tell you, you know, how you doing?
Well...
I'm nice to see you alive.
I don't want to cut you off, but I want to get to the Mystery Men because they are my favorite band right now.
How dare you cut me off for them?
They are my favorite band, and we'll be right back after this.
You're my favorite band. by Heat On by the Mystery Men on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. And now we're going to go, I guess we're going to talk some UFC 161 right now.
Weekend, UFC 161 went down amidst controversy, I would say, in the main event. But we'll get to that in just a second.
No controversy.
He won the first and second. I'm not talking about it right now. I'm not talking about
it. Wait your turn, Chris.
Now, of course, the pay-per-view started. Sean Jordan defeating Pat Barry. 59 seconds, knockout of the night for Sean Jordan.
Easy to get knockout of the night when you're the only knockout of the night. But it was a nice knockout, nonetheless.
I'm looking. You are correct, sir. Plenty of decisions in this one. Let's just say that much.
You know, it's odd because we talked about the last UFC on Fuel 10 was the card that set the record for the most submissions on a single UFC card in the modern era. This one set the record for the most decisions.
There you go.
So.
There you go.
Awesome. Shut up.
I'm telling you, just how the pendulum swings in UFC by the week.
Yep, pretty much. But, yeah, Sean Jordan defeating Pat Barry. You know, it's basically one guy was going to get knocked out. It was just really a question of how soon. And in this case, it was Pat Barry on the losing end of that deal. Really, Barry never really got going. Jordan just clocked him with a punch, and Pat Barry stumbled against the cage, and it was just pretty much academic from there. TKO by punches, 59 seconds. Not much to be said about it other than that.
Very true. Now, we had a women's bantamweight. Alexis Davis was victorious by decision over Rosie Sexton.
Yeah. You know, Alexis Davis currently ranked number 6 in the UFC bantamweight rankings. It really was the better grappler in this case. Really kind of controlled Rosie Sexton for the entire fight, and controlled her on the ground. Managed to get some ground and pound on there. Almost put it away in the second round, but basically ran out of time. But you know, Rosie Sexton had a better round in the third, but it really wasn't. It really was Alexis Davis' fight. You know, looking at her, and you say, okay, well, is she next? Is she in the discussion for Ronda Rousey? You know, assuming somewhere down the line, assuming we continue down that path, I don't know. Right now, I wouldn't say she's ready. She didn't really look like a world beater in this fight. Rosie Sexton was not in the top 10. She didn't really dominate the fight. I mean, she controlled it. She won the fight decisively, but she didn't really show anything that says to me she's got the skills to take on Ronda Rousey. I think a fighter like Miesha Tate or Sarah Kaufman could give Alexis Davis some problems, and indeed she's had those kind of problems in the past. So we'll see. I mean, she's going to have time especially with tough. With a new season of Tough, and we're waiting on Miesha Tate and then presumably Kat Zingano getting a shot at Rousey before Davis is in that conversation. So she's got some time to work on her stand-up and have some better showings.
Next fight, light heavyweight. Go ahead and take the names away.
Ryan Jimmo versus Igor Pokraik.
Bill.
Thank you.
Smith.
Now, that looks like it was a unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three judges' scorecards.
Yeah, there's really nothing to talk about in this fight. It was just kind of there. Not a lot happened. It was a kind of a bad, boring fight. You know, Jimmo gets the win, and it wasn't really close, but it wasn't really exciting either, so there's really just nothing to talk about.
Now, Roy Nelson, looks like he was defeated quite easily. 30-27, all judges' scorecards.
Stipe Miocic.
Thank you.
thank God you're here.
Yeah, that's...
He tried to put him away.
Well, you know, if any... if I recall the number correctly, it was something like 437 strikes or something like that.
Jesus.
That he laid on Roy Nelson.
Wow.
And he shook off each one. Like a zombie.
Yeah. This was a bad, bad fight for Roy Nelson.
Was it as bad? No, I didn't see this. The only one I did see was Evans Henderson, so... Was it as bad as Verdum, or was it worse?
It was actually worse.
Oh.
If you really want to get down to it. Miocic, before we go down that path that it was a bad fight for Nelson, Miocic looked awesome. He looked really, really good. Really crisp striking, really fast. Just looked like the best Miocic we've seen in the UFC. So all credit to that. Taking on a guy like Roy Nelson, who, to your point, might as well be the American Zombie. He just took every single punch from Miocic. It didn't laugh it off, but he just absorbed it. It was a very bad fight for Nelson. We've talked about how Nelson doesn't use his submission skills.
Not at all.
And he didn't even attempt it in this fight. All he was doing, he was just jumping in and trying to wing that right hand in and get that one punch knockout. And he couldn't do it because Miocic knew exactly what he was going to do. He knew the right hand was coming, so he would circle to his right away from the power. And Miocic would counter and with combinations to the body, to the head. And it was just three rounds of Roy Nelson just getting hit. Basically being a punching bag. Why he didn't go to the ground, I don't know. He looks like he got tired, probably. He did take the fight on short notice. He did only fight six weeks ago. We talked about Roy Nelson, so...
Don't be a pansy.
It's... But, yeah, I... Actually, Dan, I'm actually with you on that.
Because I was going to ask, like, how long do people usually go before their next fight?
Well, they usually have 3 to 4 months.
Oh.
But I'm fine if you come in to a fight short notice and you lose. But the way this fight went, he didn't come in with a game plan. He didn't
right.
come in. Wouldn't have expected him to be in shape as well as he would for if he had fully prepared for a full camp.
Right.
And he did tire in the second and third rounds. But it just he had a poor game plan. He fell in love with his right hand. And he couldn't land it, but he wouldn't switch to his other skill. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He's submitted guys before. Why isn't he going to the ground? You know, he's trying to be the striker that everybody loves, but
that's
not getting wins. And this was an expensive fight for Roy Nelson because this was his last fight on his contract.
Mm.
He was offered a contract by the UFC, according to Dana White. Before the fight, and he refused, taking his chances on this last fight and saying, you know, if I win this next fight, I'm going to be worth more money to you. Well, he lost the fight, and now he doesn't have a contract. So he's technically a free agent.
Oh, boy.
So he's coming off a loss. He's lost his leverage. He'll probably still – I fully expect him to re-sign with the UFC. I just don't – he won't get as much money, but it was a really bad gamble on his part. And it just did not show. It was not a good showing for Roy Nelson at all.
Now this next fight, I think we're as split as the decision was on this one. But not only that, before the fight, Dana White did say that whoever loses this, it's going to be a near impossibility that they will have a chance at the light heavyweight, the light heavyweight title. So, Rashad Evans defeated Dan Henderson, split decision. One judge saw it 29-28 Henderson, the other two saw it 29-28 for Rashad Evans. Guess which judge I went with, Omega?
I'm going to guess you went with the guy who went with Dan Henderson.
That's right. I believe that Dan Henderson won those first two rounds. And then, as Dan Henderson does, he's really off his game, like midway through the second.
Mm-hmm.
And that third round, he usually is gassed. So I will say Evans did win the third, hands down, but I don't think it was enough to win the fight. Obviously, you disagree.
Well, I mean, I really think that Henderson didn't show enough in the second round to win that fight. I mean, if you look at the, the fights are not judged on stats, but the stats say that Rashad Evans outstruck Dan Henderson
by two strikes or something.
Well, he still outstruck, and he appeared the more aggressive. He controlled the cage. Henderson was just kind of waiting for a shot, picking a shot that doesn't win fights.
Sometimes two strikes is all you need.
He wasn't succeeding. He didn't have octagon control. Wasn't being aggressive. And I thought Evans did enough to take the decision. It wasn't a good fight. I don't even think it wasn't a really good fight for either guy, in my opinion. Evans didn't show
me. I would agree. I don't think Henderson has had a good fight since he came back to UFC. Besides, of course, the Hua fight, but the other two fights are really, really bad fights for him. I mean, Machida controlled him,
mm-hmm.
And Evans obviously did enough to win. So you got to finish.
Yeah, I think it shows that Henderson has a real problem with guys that can move and counter. If someone doesn't have to be super elusive, but if they have enough quickness and movement to avoid his right hand, he can't really and just survive that first round when he's got some energy. They can win the fight. I mean, I talked about this last week. I thought it was going to go pretty much the way it went. Henderson was going to come on pretty strong in the first round. He was going to land some shots. Evan was going to dance around a little bit. And then Henderson was going to get tired in the second round. And it's basically what happened. And then so Evan started picking him apart from there. And it was enough to win. I mean, I didn't really think it was that close, that it should have been a split decision. But obviously you do. And so it's a split decision, and it makes sense now. But
It was close enough, but Dana White said it. Plenty of people said it. You can't leave it with the judges.
Nope.
And if you do, this is what happens. And a lot of guys found out what happens. I mean, even if you go further down on the preliminary card, Jake Shields, Tyrone Woodley, that was a split decision.
Yeah.
There was another one on the Facebook card, but go ahead.
Yeah, and that Shields fight was actually an example of where I think Shields stole one. I don't think Shields did enough in that fight. It's a Jake Shields fight. I mean, it was a bad fight. I didn't like the fight.
How does one judge score at 30-27 for Woodley and the other two 29-28 for
that I don't understand at all. You're absolutely right. I have no idea how that happened. I remember thinking that when they announced it. Like, wait a minute. Tyron Woodley, 30-27, and then 29-28 for Jake Shields. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Was Bruce Buffer, like, a little confused when he was reading it? I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was, because that one was probably, like, 30-27 for Woodley.
29-28 for the winner, Jake Shields.
Yeah.
I was just like...
I'm not a Jake Shields fan.
No.
But where does Dan Henderson go from here?
Well,
Do you think he should retire? I mean, he doesn't have much more to prove, and he's not going to get the title shot unless something drastic happens.
I tend to agree with you. But he's still a ranked fighter. I mean, even after the loss, I mean, he took a tumble, certainly. But to your point, he's not going to be in a title picture. Maybe give him someone like Bader, or Musasi, perhaps, if he wants. If he wants to retire, it's a good time to do so.
Is the janitor still around?
No, I don't think so.
Darn it!
I don't think he's gone.
That would be a good way to pick up a win for good old Dan.
Well, yeah,
wham.
I guess the question becomes: what is he in for? Is he if he's only in for good fights, for big fights, then he's probably going to wait around for somebody, you know, who.
Well, the whole thing was leading up to this fight. He was saying there's only one thing he hasn't done, and that's win a UFC title. So,
yeah. I think you're right. I think is it his best shot now is to maybe hold out for a better fight. You know, the lose. It, you know, we look at the top five of the or top four of the light heavyweight division now. He just lost to Evans. So you say Machida, Gustafsson, Teixeira. Gustafsson's going to fight Jones in November, I think. So you could maybe take the loser of that fight if he wants a big fight. But you really, I think, unless he's getting a name, I don't think it's worthwhile to stick around. I think there's really not a super fight around. So for him, I would be
unless he fights Silva, but that's not happening.
That's not happening. No, he's probably dying. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know what his plans are. I'm sure he's probably going to fight again. If I had to guess, that's my gut.
I don't like seeing him in the gatekeeper thing. But then again, he became very motivated when he went to Strikeforce in a similar type of role, and it wound up he won the Strikeforce light heavyweight title. So you never know.
Yeah, but it's not Strikeforce. It's not Strikeforce. This is the top of the game.
True.
It's not going to get any easier. You know.
Stop it.
It's true.
Rashad Evans? What about Rashad Evans? Where does he go? Because I don't see him in the title picture quite yet. Three uninspired fights say otherwise.
No, I don't see him in there either. I mean, I don't see it. I mean, he's not shown me anything that says I should give him a title shot versus Jones again. I mean, he didn't prove anything. I mean, he got beat by Jones and pretty soundly, and you know, with Gustafsson, Machida, and Teixeira ahead of him, I don't know. I'm not sure if Teixeira has a fight lined up. You maybe make that fight if he doesn't have a fight lined up. I think he loses that fight. You could, if you wanted to, rematch him with Little Nog and see if he can get his win back. That's a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows?
Is he willing to wait around? I don't know. I don't think there's any point in waiting around. I mean, he talked about going to 185, too. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But,
yeah. Yeah, I guess time will tell. The other thing I wanted to talk about was MMA was voted down yet again in New York.
Well, it didn't even get a vote, so that's the crazy thing. It would be one thing if MMA got a up and down vote in the New York Assembly. It's not even getting that far. It's being basically ignored in committee, and not even getting to the point where it's taken to the floor. And it's been this way for years. This New York is the only state right now that is actively sanctioning, that's what I was looking for, thank you, sanctioning mixed martial arts.
Now, if I read your tweet correctly, the amateurs can still fight there, correct?
Yes, there's some loophole that says that although professional prize fights in mixed martial arts are banned, there is no banning for an amateur fight. It's just the way the law is so narrowly written that because it's for money, you can't fight for money. But if you fight for any other, if you want to go and jump in a cage for the thrill of it, you can do so. It's a very weird thing. I mean, if you think about it, there's nothing prohibiting you from owning a mixed martial arts gym in New York. There's nothing prohibiting you from training. There's nothing prohibiting you from watching mixed martial arts. And there's no prohibition against you fighting. You just can't be paid for it.
Very odd.
And that's kind of ridiculous. And, I mean, you think about how big a UFC fight at Madison Square Garden would be.
Oh, can you imagine when
it would just be freaking huge. The money that would come into the city, I mean, I'm sure New York City gets these type of events all the time, so, I mean, it's probably not that big a deal, but it's positive money, and then you could have, there are other cities in New York State that could benefit, and you have New York citizens that are training in mixed martial arts have to drive to somewhere other state to fight or fight on an Indian reservation. It's just ridiculous, and it's just political crap. Ill-informed politicians, they're just saying, they're trying to say, I'm protecting my constituents from violence. It's a blood sport, all that same old tired garbage we've heard for years. But the fact of the matter is, 49 other states sanctioned this sport. It's not the same sport as it was in the 90s. It's got rules, it's got safety precautions, it's got all those things. It's in my mind, and of course I'm a biased observer, this is a legitimate sport now. To deny New York citizens the ability to ply this trade is ridiculous. So I don't know. It's I just fail to understand it, other than it's just political BS at this point.
Certainly, I'm glad you made that point, because my point was, can you imagine when there's finally a fight in New York City? It would be an amazing thing.
I mean, it was huge in Boston, for example.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Boston fights are great.
I don't know. I think you would get a lot of people. See, the thing is, that metro area of New York, people would just go over to the, you know, over into Jersey. So it's not that big a deal, the Izod Center. In Jersey, so it's not that big a deal, but I think it would mean it would be a windfall.
It'd be closer to go to Prudential, wouldn't it?
Huh?
It would be closer to go to Prudential Center.
Well, they do it at the Izod Center.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Gotcha.
It's kind of funny, because really what it represents is this dichotomy in that New York State has always had. Everybody in New York City can go to New Jersey, Connecticut, somewhere like that, and see a mixed martial arts professional fight. They can go to Philadelphia and, you know, Locked in the Cage. Mm-hmm. All those, you know, they can go there and see those. It's the people in upstate New York that have to drive hours to get to another state, or have to go to Canada to watch
Canada's
a professional
nicer
fight. You know, it's just ridiculous. That I mean, why would you lose that on the tax revenue? You know, I don't know. It's just, like I said, it's political grandstanding.
I didn't know you had such passion about such things.
Well, of course, I'm originally from New York State, and I just hate
it. Oh, I did not know.
Yes, so.
From upstate. I'll take this time to play yet another Mystery Men song.
Woo!
As we regroup here, and we'll be back after about 5 minutes. It's the Mystery Men with Blood Will Flow.
Yeah.
Knock your head up and down. Here we go. even turn on your elbows. Nod your head up and down.
Here we go.
Stand tall. Ride hard. Fly long. Don't ever fall. Stand tall.
Germs, we are the mystery men.
And they are here with The Blood Will Flow on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
All right, we are going to move forward right now. We're going to get to Anthony Graves. Of course, Anthony Graves, still an independent star. He is a... What?
He's kind of dead.
Well, undead. Yeah, he's yeah, the walking dead there, I guess you could say. Great gimmick. But besides all that, he is still involved with BWO. He works there quite frequently. Of course, he has a main event coming up against Joe Gacy for Sideshow Pro. But we're going to talk about how he broke in. And not only that, we're going to talk about NWA Force One, the whole idea behind the show. It's amazing when the plan comes together. But we'll get to him right after this.
Would you love a monster man? Could you understand beauty of the beast?
Oh, All right, so here he is from NWA Force One. It is none other than Anthony Graves. And how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, Dean. I'm doing very good.
Okay, you are also with Dan and Chris, also known by the name of Omega Squad. And I'm going to start out, how did you get your start in this business? I'm assuming it was through the Force One school, but I'm not sure. So I'm going right to the source.
It was exactly through the Force One school. Actually, I started training the weekend of WrestleMania 24. I remember I made that phone call that they had on the old website to call the promoter, which was Tommy Cairo, who also helped ran the school. I remember giving him a phone call, and when he answered, I quickly hung up because I got really nervous. So then Cairo called me back. He's like, "Did you just call this number?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Why'd you hang up?" I was like, "I got nervous." So so then that Saturday, Tommy took me out to a diner, and we had breakfast. And we just talked for like the first, like, about 2 hours. All we did was just talk about wrestling, what the training's going to be like, what independent wrestling is like. And then after the breakfast, we went to the school, which now he's now known as Matt Saigon. At the time, he was known as Ryu Lee, who actually helped me bump for the very first time.
Huh. Okay, so was that his start there as well? I mean, did he start at the same time, right around the same time as you?
No, Matt started about a year before me.
Okay, so you had that conversation. He was telling you how independent wrestling is, and you decided to stick with it after hearing that.
Basically, because all I really wanted to do out of, like, as being a kid, being very young, watching wrestling, all I wanted to be was a wrestler, not to go to, like, the WWE, which, don't get me wrong, if I ever get that offer, I'm going to go, but I always wanted to be a wrestler. When I was, like, a teenager, I kind of got into the independent wrestling of watching it as a fan. I got into, like, watching the early days of CZW and following, at that time, my favorite tag team was VD. When Cairo told me about what independent wrestling was, I was like, I just want to be a wrestler. Get me in that ring.
Okay. That's an interesting way to think about it, because I think some people, if they heard about that up front, and that's really great, because I think a lot of trainers don't really tell you, like, the hard truth of independent wrestling. But getting beyond that, how long, well, before even that, we, like, when you were growing up, who were some people that you were influenced by, if that's the proper word?
Influence, like, especially with my gimmick, you can tell that I'm very influenced by The Undertaker. But just straight up wrestling-wise, Bret Hart was definitely one of them. Chris Jericho is another wrestler I was a big fan of. Definitely Bret Hart was one of the guys. And you can actually see some of my moves in the ring. I definitely use a lot of, like, Bret Hart punches, Bret Hart sidewalk slams. Bret Hart was definitely one of those wrestlers that I really idolized.
Okay.
Is there any time during the training that you felt discouraged, or that you were going to just turn around and walk out and never come back?
No, not really. The only time that ever really hold me back was just myself, because there was a few times where I got injured really bad. Like, first day of training, I bruised my ankle by running to the turnbuckle wrong, and I overshot like my footstep, and I kind of bruised my ankle bone. So I was out for a while then, and it was just, you know, just thinking in my head, like, great, you hurt your ankle in the first week of training, and now you gotta wait around before you can get back in the ring again. There was also another time where I re-injured my ankle again, and then I was also going through, like, a really bad breakup at that time. So that was the only time that actually was only holding me back and made me not want to do wrestling, was just basically myself. But nothing training-wise, nothing, you know, people-wise. It was always just myself.
How long was it while you were training, did you think? Or did it all just finally start to make sense where you're like, I can do this. I can do this. I got the basics down and I'm going to go for it.
Basically, 1 year basically is when I actually got everything together. Because the old trainer at the Force One school was the White Lotus. And I don't want to say too much bad about the guy, but when it comes to ring psychology, not the best. I mean, teaching us the moves, all right, I got the moves down. Like, I know how to, like, handle people and not hurt them or basically kill them. But when it comes to, like, putting a match together and just knowing the whole psychology of a match, that I didn't know too well until I met Sammy Callahan a year later.
Now, how long was it when you were training until you had that first match?
That was about 9 months into the business, and I got on the show because somebody called out.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Did you feel that you were ready?
At the time, no, but did I wanted to be on that show? Yes, I did.
Okay. Now, let's go back to that match. What was that like for you?
It was so much fun. I'll talk about the entire day because the story is basically a whole day worth.
Okay.
At this time, I already know what my gimmick is. I'm going to be Anthony Graves. The first gimmick that they wanted to give me was Killer Tony Brooks, and didn't know how to work it, so I begged him to be Tony Graves. Cairo agreed. He let me be Tony Graves, so I bought my boots, I bought gear, and got contacts. So every show day, I've always packed up my gear, brought it to the school, do the training, and see if I can get on the show. One day, I just happened to be bringing my gear to the school. I wasn't even going to ask if I was going to be on the show because I figured this card was already stocked, was already pulled. So when I got to the school, Kyra comes up to me, he's like, "Hey, do you feel comfortable, working today?" I'm like, yeah, of course I want to work today. He's like, here's who you're going to be facing. So outcome from behind him was old WCW women wrestler Little Jeannie. And
oh, wow.
Right there, I'm just like, yes, I want this match. Just because another one of my favorites back in the day was Andy Kaufman, and he was the intergender champion.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to be reliving an Andy Kaufman moment right now. So, her and I, we talk about the match. We pretty much do it, like, almost step by step. And I felt comfortable, she felt comfortable. And we get to the Barnegat High School. That's where the show was at in February of 2009.
Mm.
So we get to the school. Luckily, the school had a gym, so I worked out for a bit just to kind of clear my head. Got myself ready. I talked to Jeannie one more time about the match. She's like, do you know what you're going to say on the mic? I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh, you're going to have to cut a promo to know why you're wrestling me. I'm like, crap. Not knowing how to cut a promo. Now I got to remember all my spots in this match. Man, this is like, to me, like, it was like, man, this is going to, I better not F up on this. So, we were the second match on the card. Right before our match, I talked to Danny Doring and Stevie Richards. Let me pick those names up. They gave me really good advice about how to cut a promo and just don't be nervous, just feed off the crowd. So, match starts. As soon as my theme music hits, I'm already in gimmick. Not the zombie character that you know today, but I was in the zone. So I get out there, I grab the mic from Phil Varlese, who was the ring announcer at that time. I cut this promo saying that my female friend who was supposed to face you got the stomach virus, so she's diarrheaing and vomiting all over the place, so she couldn't make it today, so I'm going to kick your ass. It was something on the lines of that, what I said. So the match went. I set off the crowd. I told her that she had to go back to the kitchen and whatnot, and it was an awesome match, and it's something I'm not going to forget because it was awesome working a female wrestler, even though she low-blowed me in my tombstones and rolled up for the win. It was an awesome match.
Was there ever a time while you're out there that your first, during the first match, that you kind of blanked, or were you, could you, you knew everything that was going on, you could hear the crowd, you could hear her talking, everything went smoothly?
No, to be honest, I didn't felt a blank moment, because, like, everything at that precise moment sunk in. Like, I kind of know what ring psychology was there for a minute. I knew all the spots. I knew when it was a good time to work off the crowd. It just all sank in.
Yeah. Was there ever a moment, at least within the first year, where you had to go on autopilot, or did everything, have you always never had a problem in the ring the first year?
No, I never really had that problem. A little bit of my background, I used to do theater when I was in high school, and I used to do, like, plays and stuff, so I have a really good memory when it comes to remembering something when you're performing in front of an audience.
Oh, wow, okay.
Well, there you go. So the high school training did you well there.
That helps, yeah.
Exactly. You know what? I think that's something that a lot of wrestlers should get into, because especially this day and age, it's more about the entertainment aspect rather than the wrestling. I mean, the wrestling's very important, don't get me wrong, but...
I agree with you there. Like, if you want to, like, have a character or be good on a mic, you got to need that acting background just so you know what to do when it comes to performing in front of an audience, because you also got to learn how to improv when something messes up. Like, in my early matches, I used to botch a lot, but lately, like, I hardly ever really botch as much as I used to, because I know how to, like, cover it up pretty well.
Oh, okay.
Stay away from botchamania.
Yeah, yeah. I love
botchamania, by the way. It's one of my favorite things to watch on YouTube.
It's just
my way of learning from other people's mistakes.
I'll give you that one.
That's a good way to look at it. So you brought up that you didn't quite have psychology until Sammy Callahan came aboard. Now, did Cairo leave and Callahan kind of took over booking, or what exactly happened there?
Sammy Callahan came in the summer of 2009. It was when that particular summer in 2009, Force One didn't do a lot of summer shows. We did a lot of TV tapings. And that's when Sandy came in. He helped retrain the students. That was also the time where White Lotus left trainer, and Sammy Callahan came in and took over with training. Sammy taught us how to train hard and train well. I was like, whenever there was a night of training, like, I know, like, a couple people didn't show up for it because Sammy knows how to push people in training. And he pushes people for the good, not for he wants to blow you up. He wants to make you better. So Sammy came in. We did the TV tapings. And then that September, we had our first show back. And you can tell, like, some of the students got a little bit better when it came to that show. That was also the show when the Office Spot first came about. And it was me and Bear facing Lucian Theron and Brian Blackheart. And I can tell that my training got a little bit better because I knew what to do and what to call while we were out there.
Now, it was very shortly after that, I think 2010, when Force One renamed Force One Pro in NWA, correct?
Yeah. I don't know, like, the story about, like, the separate of the ways. I knew that Cairo had a little bit of trouble, so he gave the company over to Diego DeMarco, which Diego DeMarco asked Calzone if he could help him out. Calzone helped out. He's like, let me bring in these people to help make this this show better.
So
Calzone brought in Sammy to help out with booking and training and bringing in name.
What was it like backstage? I mean, we could talk about the NWA and how, you know, WCW and the NWA kind of fell by the wayside a little bit. But once you got the NWA name associated with the company, did that change? Was there a new buzz back there? Did it fire everybody up?
Well, when I debuted, that was when NWA came to Force One. So at that time, me kind of not being me being more of a wrestling fan than being a wrestler, I guess you can say.
Right.
I was, you know, thinking like NWA. Ooh, cool! We're gonna get the national heavyweight belt at our shows every month. At the time, I was like, yeah, I'm kind of excited. And then after a few months, I kind of got it. It's like, oh, we're just really just using the NWA name, not really using all the claws besides the insurance, I think.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, so things, it didn't really change.
No, not really.
Did it ever, was there ever a boost in, as far as attendance, booking more shows? Or, I mean, was it just a plateau?
When Force One Pro Wrestling turned into Force One Pro, basically when Sami Callihan took over the booking and we start booking more independent wrestlers and more local names, that's when it started to grow.
Okay. All right. And then you got your first, not your first, but you got the Force One Tag Team Championship under the NWA name, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was July of 2011 when I became tag team champions.
Now, how did that come about?
I worked hard for that. From when Sami Callihan got into the picture, and they told us we had a meeting, and it's like, we need everyone to step it up. We need everyone to help out with flyering. We need everyone to go harder with the training. We want to make this a better product. And I took that ball and I ran with it. Every training day that we had, the first 2 hours, I would go out with not only with Sammy and Calzone, but I also took other students out, and we would flyer all the shopping centers. We go all the towns, put up posters, and I did that for about 2 years. And not missing a training day, when I did get into the ring, I trained twice as hard, and I basically worked my butt off for almost 2 years before I got the title belt. And I got the title belt is because the fans wanted the Monster Squad to win the belt, because the Monster Squad was a huge tag team in NWA Force One. Like, we started out as we were also one of the most hated tag teams, just because not only that, the way that we worked out there was that during intermission, I would go out and scare little children. Even during the matches, I would scare little children just to get that heat. So when we became good guys after Bear left, that's when Dara and I became tag teams, and the fans liked the fact that we were being good. And every time our music played, it was like almost like an LOD pop in a crowd.
Wow.
So after that, we kept getting more cheers. And then one day, I was also the guy behind the event pages on the Force One. Like, I was the guy who was basically creating that. And then I typed in there, who would you like to see win the tag team titles in the next, it was the Tour de Force tournament. So who would we like to see in that threat? It was me, it was the Monster Squad, Blackgate Asylum, and Team Lancelot in the championship match. And I said it, who would you like to see to win the belt, or who wants to win that tag team match? And at least 10 to 15 people who commented on that said it's going to be the Monster Squad. And earlier that day, I was driving around with Calzone. We were picking up a few things before the show started. And John was on the phone, I believe with Sammy or someone else from the booking. And it was with the tag team match, I think it's time for the tag team titles to change. All the fans are talking about the Monster Squad. I think it's their night. And I'm just like, ooh.
No.
So that, it mean that... It was just that night was just awesome. The match went well. I love working with Alex Payne. Him and I, we can put a good story together, and we did. And the reaction of that crowd, it's something that to this day has not topped all my matches I've ever had in my career. That was the most, like, when, like, if you ever watch the footage of that match, you could just see, like, those were legit tears coming out of my eyes when I won those belts.
Wow. Now, if you could retire now, go ahead. I'm sorry, I broke in.
Okay.
Go ahead.
If I could retire now, knowing that that was, like, my highest moment in my career, I'm good with that.
Cool. Now, I'm just looking, I'm taking a step back from where we are. I'm just looking at this roster. Once Sami Callihan took over, it looks like DJ Hyde was involved. You had
a who's who.
You had Moxley involved for a while, or a show or two. Saigon.
I got to work Moxley one time.
Well, tell us about that.
That was a good night and a very bad night for me. It was a good night because that the particular match that I was in was a six-way. It was Devin Moore with the Monster Squad versus DJ Hyde, John Moxley, and Tyler Veritas. And it was the first time we ever called the match on a fly. And
okay.
Being always, always good with remembering things, going out there completely improvising the entire match, I was just nervous, didn't know what to do. And when I got to work with Moxley, or now known as Dean Ambrose, he pretty much told me what to do out there, and that's another moment I'm not going to forget, because I got to work with Moxley, and he pretty much helped me out knowing what to do in that match. The worst part of that night was the particular contacts that I had in my eyes. They were like the first contacts I've ever bought, so they expired.
Oh.
So I put them in my eyes started hurting, and I didn't want to take them out, so I worked with them. Long story short, I had to go to the hospital afterwards because my eyes still shut because it was so much pain.
Oh.
Wow.
That definitely is not a good night. Now, I'm just looking over some of the matches from Force One here. The title change, like you said, happened, it looks like, July 8th, 2011.
Correct.
And then you had some other matches going on, and it looks like up until 2012 things were going good for you, and then the promotion just kind of stops.
Yeah, it kind of stopped instead of the Monster Squad, and it just stopped because I love working with the Monster Squad. I love working with John Dahmer. John Dahmer was another person that helped me understand how to put a match together, and psychology-wise, I just learned from him. Like, whenever he called a tag team match, I just watched him how he called it, and I learned from it. And it just sucked that when Force One ended, it kind of ended the Monster Squad as well.
Dummy, do you know what happened? Like, why did the company stop running?
The only thing I knew was around that time, Calzone was also getting married, so it was like he wanted to take a break from Force One to pretty much take care of his wedding, and it's understandable. Like, you got to take care of your family first.
Yes.
And next thing you know, Force One was just never came back.
Oh, wow. So you never got a chance. It was just all right. It's over.
It is what it is, but at the same time, like, I can't do anything about it. I'm not the owner of the company, and, I just gotta, luckily I can, I've been working other places. But with BWO, like, I'm glad that BWO has welcomed me with doing shows, and Sideshow Pro, which that's now becoming my new home fed, which I'm helping trying to get off to get them to do monthly shows. I'm also working for IWA Vintage, another show that I'm helping a lot as well. So, I mean, it sucks that Force One is gone. It was my home fed. It was the one fed that I cared a lot about. Like, I used to eat, sleep, breathe Force One. Like, whenever I wasn't training, get home from the gym, I used to pop in a Force One DVD and watch it and just go over my matches and make sure, all right, I won't do that next time. Oh, I can see myself flipping there. I'm not going to do that anymore. Force One, I won't say Force One is gone because right now Coastal Pro Wrestling. They're doing the Bad Invasion angle, so it's kind of keeping Force One alive, which I'm kind of glad to see.
All right, now I want to go back and just if you could pick one memory besides the tag team title win, if you could pick one memory of Coastal, not Coastal, I'm sorry, of Force One, what would that be?
Working the Osirian portal and doing the Thriller dance in the middle of the match.
There you go. Well, tell us about that. How did that come about? I mean, was that something discussed? Well, obviously it had to be discussed behind the curtain, but I mean, how did it come about?
It was back when the Monster Squad was just, it was me, Bear, and Dahmer, and it was just basically me and Bear doing the tagging, and Dahmer was our manager. And before the show, Portal comes up to us, and they were like, all right, this is what we want to do. We want to throw the Thriller dance in the middle of this match. I'm like, I am in. So we talk about it, how we're going to do it, and so we go out, we have our match. The match is actually really good. A lot of high-flying, a lot of lucha, and then once we thought we got the Portal in their grasp, they throw out that hypnotizing spot that they do, and next thing you know, Thriller song starts playing, and I'm chasing Ophidian around, Bear's chasing Abbasis around, and we get back in the ring. We do the Thriller dance, and then next thing you know, I got an Egyptian and a snake jumping on top of me.
Only in independent wrestling, that's what I say. So, Anthony, Dan, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, not quite. There's weird stuff that happens on TV. It's just not as good sometimes. How do you want Force One remembered in history in indie wrestling?
I would love Force One to remember that it was the best South Jersey promotion that had Chikara, CZW, and Ring of Honor talent. It was basically, this is how I wanted to remember. It was basically the WWE of South Jersey independent wrestling. It had awesome storylines. It had a few hardcore matches, not death matches. It had hardcore matches. It had people and tag teams that you loved. It was basically like a WWE of independent wrestling.
Right. Are there any, other than the companies that you mentioned previously that you're working for, do you think there's any other indie wrestling out there in the area that could possibly step up and take its place?
I don't work for Coastal. I could see them being the next type of like Force One wrestling. Sideshow Pros could be another one. That's the one that I'm definitely in, and I'm going to promote that. Vintage, I'll let you guys know when their show starts up and running again. They got canceled last week, so this Saturday they're doing another show. I may be on it or not. I just got to take a look at my schedule. EWO is just a good classic, good independent wrestling. But to have the same feeling as Force One, I don't think any other company would have the same feeling as Force One did, at least in my eye and my heart.
Gotcha.
All right, and I do have a caller, and they did indicate they wanted to speak, so I'm going to put them on. So, caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Yo, Tony, it's Chad. What's up?
Chad.
Yo, in case you guys don't know, I am the last bastard trainee student of the Force One school. I was pretty much the last person to survive out of my entire class. I had several court dates because Force One closed down. We had to go into the ring and get the building.
You were involved with that.
Involved with that? I had to talk to my cops. It's a long story.
I've heard the story. I just didn't realize that you were part of that. But go ahead.
Yeah, I got the legal fees to prove it. But, Tony, I got one question, and I need you to answer it. It's something that's been on my mind, and what exactly is the feeling, the essence of a Monster Squad pop? I need you to tell me, because I've been searching for that feeling all my life.
It's the feeling that you get when you step through the curtain and every single body in the arena jumps up
stop.
And cheers at the same time.
What if you step through the curtain and there's only six people? Because I've experienced that recently.
Hey, if you get every single one of them to jump up and pop for you, yeah, you got yourself a Monster Squad pop. It may not have the hair raising of a full arena, but if you get every one of them to jump up and pop for you, then you did your job.
Of a full arena or enforced one's case sometimes, because I did security in most of those shows, a full renovated ice skating rink that's freezing in the wintertime and beyond hot in the summertime. Oh, God.
Oh, those days are dead. Oh,
those were good. Yeah, that feeling's heat exhausting.
Yeah.
All right. So, Chad, do you have anything else for Anthony?
No, I don't have anything else. I'm wrestling RV1 in his retirement match for my birthday, July 16th. So if I know you, go to that. If not, you know, do something else. And God bless.
All right. Thank you, Chad. It was a pleasure to actually hear you on the show.
Oh, and real quick, my half-brother, Casey Penman, wants to say something.
Hey, what's up? SciShow Pro returns. July 27th, be there.
And next is Mr. Markiplier himself, Mr. MLJ, so peace.
Yes, okay. So thank you, Chad. So that was Chad. We're going to leave it at that.
I love that guy.
Yeah, you know what? Who can't but love him? But anyway, Anthony, I'm gonna wrap this up with you. I do thank you for coming on and sharing some of those moments. Now, do you have anything coming up? Of course, you're in the main event of Sideshow Pro coming up.
Sideshow Pro, main eventing at the Proving Grounds. That's the name of the building, correct?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
At the Proving Grounds, July 27th, me versus Chainsaw Joe Gacy in the main event.
I'm already excited to see that. So,
you're not going to stick your nose in that, are you, Dean?
No, see, the thing about independent wrestling, if you don't work for a certain promotion, you don't stick your nose. I'll be there, but I'll probably be in the DJ booth.
Probably good for the best.
Probably, because I don't want to take I don't want to take it to my grave, as Anthony would say.
There's my line.
Yeah. So, now, can people follow you someplace on the social media networks if they want to stay
yes,
in touch
can.
With? Good.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, they can. On Facebook at www.facebook.com/agraves13. They can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at AnthonyGraves13. I'm also on Vine, which is kind of like Instagram, but with video. And all you
That's
gotta do
awesome.
Is just type in my name, Anthony Graves. I post a lot of funny videos on there. And that's all you can follow me right now. Yeah, that's it.
All right, so of course, July 27th, that's in Deptford, New Jersey, the main event with Joe Gacy. Anthony, I do want to thank you so much for coming on, but we're going to move right along to MLJ right after we play your music, then his music. So thanks
all
a
right,
lot
guys,
for coming
thank
on.
You for having me on. Thank you,
all
guys.
Right.
Thank you.
Would you love a monster man? Could you understand beauty of the beast?
Anthony Graves, and if we can plug it one more time, Sideshow Pro returns coming up on July 27th, and that's at the Proving Grounds, 1030 Delcy Drive, Building 4W in beautiful Deptford, New Jersey. And I can't wait for that main event, Anthony Graves, Joe Gacy. Come on out and you know, show support to independent wrestling. Now, what I am going to do now, of course, another voice of Sideshow Pro was MLJ. MLJ, you can find now in CZW ring announcing. You can find him sometimes commentary, but mostly ring announcing. He fills in for Larry Legend. There's stuff going on. So we're going to get right to MLJ. And Dan, I know this is your favorite theme music of all time.
Blood, pride, survive. You're mistaken, your bones are breaking. Yeah. Like the Nazi, like the tribes that come to battle on this night. The ring, the field, the war. That's where they lay the law.
Lay the law, once again, prepare for war. This is the real and not for a night. To live is to die, a free of denying.
To blood, to pride, to thrive.
All right, so here he is, the voice. Well, one of the voices of Force One Pro Wrestling, MLJ. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Oh, I am doing great, Mr. Dean Dixon. A pleasure to be on Hell in a Cell Radio. And before I get started, I just want to say I got to rib Anthony Graves a little bit. He was talking about how he doesn't botch much anymore. But as soon as he came on the show, my stream died. So way to blow the spot. MLJ up. Team Decadence.
That's right. Now, you're also on the line with Dan and Omega Squad. I'm going to start out because I think we have very similar stories, very, very similar ways that we broke into this business that we love wrestling. Now, how did you break in?
Well, basically, you know, as soon as I got my full driver's license in late 2006, I basically scoured the Philadelphia, New Jersey independent scene all over the place. I was going to, you know, all kinds of different shows, Ring of Honor, CZW, Chikara. I found out about this Force One place. They were having their first show in Egg Harbor City at a intermediate school. And so I decided to go there, give it a shot. And it was, you know, mostly what I expected, like a low-level indie show with a couple guys that, you know, looks like they have potential, like they're students and whatnot, the young guys. And the very next day, one of the guys who was working with that show, Mr. John Solo, a.k.a. the king of the gimmick table these days. He was in the restaurant that I was working at. I was a food server at that time at TGI Fridays in the Egg Harbor Township area. And I heard him talking to his kids about the show. And so I approached him. I said, hey, I was at that show too. So, you know, we started back and forth. And that started my relationship with John Solo, which always ended up with him saying, you know, come down to the school, come down to the school. And I was thinking, well, they're probably going to try to, you know, get me for some money. And if I do want to go to a school, I want to go to a more reputable, in my head, you know, kind of place like Ring of Honor or Chikara or something like that. But, you know, yeah. A year and a half goes by and he keeps saying, come down to the school. And so one day it's like November of 2008. And they are having a show at Spontaneous Sports, a.k.a. the hottest place in the summer, coldest place in the winter. And I show up, it's monsooning out, I'm very late. And he's like, oh, I didn't think you were coming. I said, well, no, you know, the weather's bad. And he goes, well, are you still interested in doing color commentary? I said, well, of course. He said, good, you're on match number 4. I told the promoter, you know, a lot about Breaker Moran. And in my head I'm thinking, I know nothing about Breaker Morant. But to him, I say, of course, I know Breaker Morant. Yeah.
Oh,
and, you know, I have that on DVD, and it's quite possibly the worst ever commentated match in the history of independent professional wrestling.
But did that lead to a gig with Force One?
Yeah, because right after that, you know, I had so much fun doing that one show. I had yet to go to the school, which he was so clamoring me for me to go for it, to go to, rather. And after the show, I was just so excited. And I went and hung out with Danny Jamondo and Judas Young after the show, and I was like, wow, I'm with the boys. I did commentary. Wow, like, I'm just marking out all over the place. And so I'm like, well, what is the school that you speak of? Because I couldn't find any information about it online whatsoever. No address, no phone number, no nothing. And because it was basically in the back of this warehouse. You know, if you ever went to the old Forest One school, it was this old, like, abandoned, like, big building with two rings in it, very dusty and very much, you know, like an independent wrestling school you would imagine to be like. And so I said, yeah, let me go down to the school. And ever since then, it was like every Tuesday and Thursday I was down there, you know, just hanging out and, you know, creating friendships with all these guys that I now know.
Okay, so you started out there, a Breaker Morant expert, if you will. And
yes,
then,
I have the Breaker Morant expert.
Now, what happened after that point? I know we kind of covered it a little bit, but, I mean, were you number one, like, you were on commentary, that was a complete gig for you?
Yeah, that's basically what I wanted to do, like, as soon as I got there, like, because when I got there, they were using Phil Varley's for ring announcing, so I was like, all right, well, he's doing that, and I had always wanted to do color commentary, you know, just once, just to try it out, and then when I had that shot, and they wanted to keep me around, you know, they told me I did a good job, and this, that, and the other, and I kept coming down to the school, and I forged a relationship with John Solo. We were the first team there. And, you know, so I figured commentary was going to be it. That's all I wanted to do. And then I kind of sort of lucked into the whole ring announcer thing when first Phil Varley's left and then later on John Solo left and they were left with a void for ring announcing. So they asked me if I could do it. And originally I think it was supposed to be just like a one-show deal, like, hey, do ring announcing, get us through this, and then you'll be back commentating, and I was like, okay, fine. And then it kind of just stuck because, you know, I guess I got over with the fans somehow. I don't know. And, you know, it just went on from there.
Okay, so your time there. When did John Solo leave? Because he eventually left, and that brought in Salamander Jones, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was sort of like a revolving door, like, of people coming in to do commentary, too. It was like, Varley's, I want to say, left right before the April 2009 show, citing conflicts, you know, management conflicts, you know, as there always is in independent wrestling. You know,
yeah.
He just, you know, he wanted no more to do with it, so, you know, he left, and then that's when Solo started doing the ring announcing. And then that left me by myself at the play-by-play table. From, like, September and October. So I was kind of doing, like, a Joey Styles kind of thing, just doing solo commentary. Sometimes Solo would pop in and out, but I think he did our January 2010, our very first relaunch show, and then after that he left. I forget why, but he didn't want to do it anymore, I think. I don't know, but all I know is he wasn't there anymore. So then they asked me come February for the This City Burns show in Hamilton, New Jersey, to do ring announcing. And then they brought in Salamander Jones, Chris Methods, Brett Lauderdale would pop on and off. I would still do it on and off. Nick Gage did it a few times. You know, so, I mean, it was kind of just like a revolving door of commentators, much like a 2004 IWA Mid-South show.
Okay, so Nick Gage commentating on a family-oriented show. Tell me about that.
Oh, it was the best thing ever. I remember, like, I was a big, and still am, fan of Chris Hero, and I just remember doing commentary for the No More Sorrows show, which was April 2010. It was Chris Hero versus Sammy Callahan main event, and here I am sitting there doing commentary with Nick Gage, thinking that it's the most surreal thing that I've ever done up to that point. Because, I mean, where else does that happen besides Force One?
Yeah. So you have Nick Gage there. Was he contained? Because obviously if you've seen a Nick Gage promo, you know he can go a little over the edge sometimes.
Yeah, he did slip a couple times, but, you know, who doesn't? And especially the fact that when the worst thing you can say is that Nick Gage slipped, then I think you've done fantastic.
Yeah, very true. Now, getting more into the... So, if I understand properly, then the commentary was a revolving door, so there wasn't, like, necessarily a team?
It was... The primary team was supposed to be a three-man between me, Chris Method, and Salamander Jones, with Chris Methods being, like, the complete heel. I was, like, the face of the company because I was the commissioner at the time as well, and Salamander Jones being, like a tweener kind of, even Stevens kind of guy. And but even still, you know how an indie show goes. Sometimes a guy says, oh, I want to do commentary for this. Oh, I want to do commentary for that. And can I get on? And it turns into a thing that way. And,
yeah.
Sometimes I sat out because I wanted to preserve my voice or whatever, because I was still new with the ring announcing thing. So I didn't know how my voice would hold up. And there was, I had some questions about it myself. So.
Okay. So you were the commissioner. Force One.
Yeah,
Tell us about that role. Tell us about that role, how you got involved in that, and what the storyline was with that.
Basically, the storyline was in the our very first relaunch show, January of 2010, Sammy wins the title, which was vacated. It was supposed to be the rematch between him and Patch for the heavyweight title, and their first match they had in September was awesome. I mean, you hear Sammy Callahan versus Patch, and you're like, what kind of match is that? It was great. Like, these two dudes are just chopping the hell out of each other. And it was supposed to be the rematch for the title come January, but Patch did not attend the show. So we held the title up, had a four-way. I think it was Black G's, Sammy, Ryu Lee, a.k.a. Matt Saigon, and Ophidian. And Sammy finally wins. I come up into the ring and present him with the title, and he's doing this promo, and he starts to heel out, and he, blames things on me, and here comes Joe Gacy and Ryan Slater, the Runaways, and then next thing you know, Sammy Callahan just hits me in the head with the title belt. I'm like, okay. And then the Runaways put the boots to me, and this was the start of the new regime.
Okay.
Which was big heel organization, which was overthrowing Force One. And it was just, kind of eased into the role of being the commissioner because I was the one who Sammy hit with the belt. And that was that.
I found that in independent wrestling, things like that happen. There's just one little thing that happens, and before you know it, and especially if you're not really a worker, per se, if you're not a wrestler, like, one little thing can happen, and before you know it, you're in a storyline. So I can understand too. Now, I do have a caller, and they did indicate they wanted to speak, so I'm going to put them on. Let's see. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Dude, how can you guys have a Force One retrospective without me?
Does anybody know
who this is yet?
I'm not sure.
This is Johnny Calzone calling.
Wow, Johnny Calzone.
And I do listen. I mean, come on, I had to listen to Tony Graves for a half hour.
Yeah, true. I do apologize.
Is that MLJ on the other line?
That is MLJ.
Yeah, man.
Hey, man, I just texted you a little while ago. How you doing, pal?
Doing great. What's going on, John?
Good. Good. I just wanted to call in and tell you guys you're doing a badass job. I don't know if I can say 3- and 4-letter words on here, but anybody that knows me is probably going to understand that I don't really care. But I'm going to tell you right now, Emil's a badass guy. I love MLJ. I love Tony Graves. Force One isn't dead. We're coming back.
Oh.
That's the best thing I've heard all night, by far.
Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, all of you. So, but... just to let you know, Tony Graves does botch much. Just want to throw that out there.
All right,
just messing with you, Tony. I'm just kidding.
All right, but thanks for calling in. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I just want to tell you all that MLJ is one of the coolest dudes ever. Tony Graves is one of the coolest dudes ever. And Chondo Conshohocken is the next big thing in wrestling.
He very well could be. I've seen him train. I've seen him work some matches. I certainly agree. He's come a long way in a very short time, I do believe.
I just want to let you guys know, too, that I got out of bed to make this phone call. Okay? I was half asleep listening to this thing, and I had to get out of bed to make a phone call. So you guys are doing a bang-up job. Kill it. Tony Graves botches, but he's an awesome guy. MLJ, coolest dude ever. One of my best friends in the entire world. Check my wedding pictures. All you guys, have a good night. I'm out.
All right. Thank you, Johnny.
I love you, bud.
All right. So Johnny Calzone with a big surprise there. Force One is not dead.
That's
wow.
The best news I've gotten all night. I couldn't be any more excited than to hear that. So,
wow, that's so. Let's try to regroup. I'm not even sure where we were. I was thinking of sending the invite because, of course, he was a very big name involved with NWA Force One. But wow, Emil, how do you feel about that? Rather surprising announcement there.
Hey, all I can say is I hope it's true, man. Me and Calzone have talked about this a few times, you know, bringing it back and when the best time would be. And, you know, like, it's never really been dead. I mean, we just got busy with, like, real-life stuff, you know. Like you said, he got married. We both got, you know, quote-unquote big boy jobs and, you know, there's a whole lot of other wrestling in the area, and, you know, you just don't want to come back to an oversaturated market. And we want to put our best foot forward. We want to come back when the time is right to do it and when we have the time to put our best foot forward. We just don't want to bring back Force One to do it. We want to actually bring it back and mean it.
That's amazing. Hell in a Cell Talk Radio does it again, Emil, with a huge announcement. Don't worry. Exact words. That's a quote. Force One is not dead. Now, so you're the commissioner. You're the face of the company. Did you find that hard to have like a dual role, both on commentary and doing this this commissioner role?
I mean, it sort of made it, and with the help of Chris Methods, because he was like the heel guy plus the new regime guy too. He kind of set me up for a lot of things, too, because he would always, you know, heel out and everything like that, and it would just be natural for me to come back with, you know, a retort that puts Force One in a positive light, which is what I was supposed to do anyway. But he kind of made it easy for me in that way because he knew his role and his direction, and it just made it easy for me to come back with a response.
I got you. So, moving a little bit forward now, what are some memories of NWA Force One? Something that you look back on and you go, wow, that's NWA Force One.
I mean, this is look back on NWA Force One. I know Graves touched on it earlier, but looking at the locker room, you had guys from Ring of Honor, you had guys from Chikara, from CZW, from Jersey All-Pro, some old veteran guys, we had a few Canadians come in here and there. We had Chris Hero come in, Brody Lee. You know, it was just like a microcosm of the area, the whole area of independent wrestling of the Northeast at times. That was cool in and of itself. In April of 2011, we did the Super Show that we co-promoted with WXW from Germany. That was, I would go out on a limb and say that was pretty much my favorite show, just because of how unique it was to have these world-traveled individuals wrestling in a converted hockey rink in Egg Harbor Township, New Jersey. I mean, it was just so weird of a thing to happen, but I'm so happy that it did because, you know, there were some really awesome matches that took place that night, and it was actually the first time that Ophidian and Amasis went one-on-one. So that was, you know, a cool thing that happened in Force One. So, I mean, those would be, like, my favorite memories.
Now, I didn't know, Dan. Go ahead.
Sorry. Without your knowledge. Now that it's working. When you have a company like Force One just kind of suddenly shut down like that, what keeps you in the business like that?
It's kind of weird because right when Force One did close its doors or went on hiatus, that's kind of when I was transitioning to my new big boy job, you know, in the food and beverage management industry in the casinos. So I wasn't really able to make the weekend dates anymore. So it went hand in hand. And the only reason why I came back was because it's not something I asked for. My bosses just decided to give me Friday and Saturday nights off as a manager in a casino. And I was like, what? Seriously? Like, they're like, yeah, this is going to be a for now on thing. And then right after that, I called up DJ High and I was like, hey, man, I want to come back and do commentary for CZW. And then I got in touch with Phil Varlees. And then I got in touch with the promoters of the Sideshow Pro and Riot Pro and On Point Wrestling. And, you know, as the months went on. And I was actually, like, the week before I started getting Fridays and Saturdays off, for the week or 2 weeks before, was actually King of Trios. And I actually got a phone call to do commentary for King of Trios weekend, but I wasn't able to do it. I know. Like, I was crushed. Like, when I wasn't able to do it, like, when I got that phone call, I was like, man, I would love to, but I can't because of my job. And then, like, 2 weeks later, I find out they're giving me Fridays and Saturdays off. I'm like, oh, okay. You know?
That couldn't work out any sweeter, really.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, you know, it was not something I asked for, but it was something that, it was a luxury they decided that they could give me, and I took it, and, you know, here I am now working for, you know, Dog and IWA Vintage coming up and Sideshow Pro coming up, CZW, of course, my new friends at Excite Wrestling up in Binghamton, New York. So, you know, there's big things lined up.
I mean, all the days you work at your big boy job and then the days you have off, you're working promotions. I mean, do you ever get tired of it, or what keeps you going?
The fact that, you know, for my job, my real job, my career, I had to do it because I had to, you know, make money. And wrestling has always been my passion. It has been for the past 18 years of my life. And just being able to be involved in it in some way, shape, or form, that just drives me to keep on going, keep on, you know, to see what avenues I can go down. You know, I like to travel. I like wrestling. I like meeting people. You know, it's, you wrap all that up into one thing, and that's pretty much indie wrestling.
Wow.
Now, let's talk about CZW for a moment or two. What are some of your favorite moments in CZW since you've been involved?
Well, when Larry Legend dropped the bombshell on everybody that he was stepping down as a full-time ring announcer, called me up from the commentary table to ring announce the main event of Cage of Death between the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont, and DJ Hyde. That wasn't something that we spoke about in the back. That was all spur of the moment. Larry didn't get that cleared with DJ or Maven or any of the other people in the back there. That was all real. That was a shoot. You know what I mean? He called me up and he passed me the mic and he gave it to me. He bestowed that honor upon me. And like that was really cool, you know. And because Larry Legend, you know, he has set me up for success. You know, not just in CCW, but he's been trying to help me out to get into some other places as well. And been nothing more than positive support for me.
Awesome. That's good to hear from, you know, guys helping each other out in the business. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, and this is a tournament of death question. What's it like getting in the ring when you have literally hundreds of light tubes, not only on the ropes, but on the ground? Of course, I'm talking about the main event between Danny Havoc and Scotty Vortex. What's that like being in there? I mean, how surreal a moment is that as you're announcing these guys and they're about to really harm each other?
Yeah, that was pretty much one of the if not the most high-profile match I've re-announced. It was definitely within the top three. Just standing in there, you know, I decided, you know, when they're setting up, you know, I might as well get in this ring while they're setting up these light tubes. And I'm looking around, and I'm watching them set up these light tubes all around the ring and all over the ring mat there. And the only thought in my head is, how the hell am I going to get out of here? Because there wasn't really a lot of room.
I thought that, too.
There wasn't really a lot of room for me to maneuver around.
Yeah, and, I was just saying I thought that, too. But go ahead.
Yeah, with light tubes all over the ground, too, like, I was starting to think, like, I hope I don't trip and fall all over these light tubes, because not only would that, you know, mess me up and, like, cut me up all over, but it would also, like, kind of ruin the main event and make people not, you know, too happy with me. So that was, like, the most nerve-wracking thing was not, you know, making sure that the announcements of the guys were on point and everything like that and making it a big match atmosphere, because I knew I had to do that. But getting out of the ring just had me, like, so nervous, because I didn't want to screw it up, or I didn't want to break a single light tube. You know what I mean? I didn't want to, you know, take away from the match or hurt myself in the process. And that was the most nerve-wracking thing, I think, that happened in my career.
All right. So, Emil, people, if they're interested in following you on social media, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook.com/GuapoMLJ. That's also my Twitter, @GuapoMLJ. I also have one for my soul wrestling purposes, which I haven't really updated that much, but it's MLJ Pro on Twitter. And on Instagram, it's ML_EFFING_J for MLFingJ. That's on Instagram. So those are my social networking sites. And I love followers, so hit me up.
All right. So, Emil, I want to thank you for this time. You know what? We have to get back to the Wrestling Roundup thing, and I think you're a fine guest for that. The Wrestling Roundup, of course, is when we talk about issues going on in professional and independent wrestling. So I think you're going to get another call for that.
Awesome.
All right. So I do want to thank you yet again, and you have a good night, sir.
Thank you. You too.
Blood, pride, survive. You're forsaken, you're born to break it. Yeah. Like the Nazi, like the tribes, they come to battle on this night. The ring, the field, the field of war, that's where they lay the law.
Lay the law, once again, prepare for war.
All right, so that was MLJ, of course, with CZW and various numerous promotions on the greater Philadelphia area. So that, wow, big news during MLJ's interview.
And we didn't even get the breaking news thing.
No, we didn't. Well, I wasn't prepared.
I was thinking it during the interview. I'm like, why hasn't he, you know, why hasn't Calzone come back and started up again? I'm like, hey.
What?
And before I get the thought out, mostly because, you know, my technology sucks over here, I missed it.
Well, there you go, Dan.
And I'm very happy about that.
Now, what I do want to talk about now is, of course, Mark Henry. Mark Henry making us all proud, as he deserves the wrestling Oscar, if you will, for his performance on Monday Night Raw.
It was impressive.
Was really good. I thought it was time for... The only reason I thought it was a work, if you will, was seeing a stage. even though, you know, he told him to stay, I was like, okay, something's going to happen here. But what did you guys think about that amazing promo by Mark Henry?
You want to go first, Dan, or you want me?
I didn't hear what he asked me. I'm just pretending to be here right now.
Oh.
Well, go ahead, Omega.
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, I really felt it was like a perfectly crafted swerve because we all know about Henry's injuries. He seems to be out every 6 to 7 months with some kind of injury, and you know it felt real. I mean, you think, well, he's been in the business for quite a while. He did strong competition. He's probably pretty beat up. Maybe it's time. So you really are like, okay, you know, maybe it's time, and you want it, and it's like one of those things where it's like the guy's retiring, heel or face, you want to respect him.
Those fans need to respect him.
Yeah,
I really thought for a second, oh wow, he's really going, and as soon as Cena and Henry went to interact, I knew, no, this is going to end bad. And the slam, the world's strongest slam, it was fantastic. I'm looking forward to this.
All right,
there
so
was
that
something
was...
else. There was actually something else I was hoping I would remember. And I can't. I was hoping it would pop in my head if I started talking about it. I'm sorry. There was something else I wanted to mention. I can't remember that, but on Raw.
Ziggler Del Rio, maybe?
No.
No? Okay.
Well, there was a double turn there. That's interesting.
Oh, no. The on-the-fly booking of the main event. Nobody else read this?
Tell me what you're talking about.
Not the Daniel Bryan match.
Oh, with the, when they, the, yeah.
I'll get to it right now. Hold on, there it is. Basically, that the match between Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton was called off for real and was not part of the storyline. The call was made after Bryan suffered a stinger following the missile dropkick on Orton. He was so pissed backstage that he walked up to Triple H and expressed his anger towards him in the gorilla position, resulted in a loud argument between the two. So there was real backstage heat for a second. Apparently, he landed funny after the dropkick, and he was like, "Don't go out there and do the match then." And they literally called it off live on TV. I thought that was very interesting.
I wasn't even aware. I only saw the Mark Henry thing. I don't pay attention much to WWE.
Oh, and that and the kid that killed his little sister. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, he got charged, you know,
yeah,
with
I
murder.
Heard about that. Yeah.
They really.
That's just sad.
What scares me is the kid showed no remorse while being questioned. Like,
Look, even little kids can be kind of tweaked.
That's just terrible.
It's not, you know, yeah, it's horrible, but.
I wanted to smack my sister, but I never wanted to kill her.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he wanted to kill her, per se, now. What moves did he put on
her? He dropped the elbow on her 5 times.
Oh, the people's elbow or just
the... I think it was the macho elbow.
Oh.
The brother, 13 years of age, was arrested today with second-degree murder charge after... The autopsy revealed that his sister died of severe blunt trauma, broken ribs, a lacerated liver, and internal bleeding. So he slammed her on the floor and dropped the elbow 5 times on her.
Oh.
Where was this kid's parents?
The death is a tragedy. We express the heartfelt condolences. Authorities have already charged the accused with second-degree murder and determined this was not an accidental death. Due to a wrestling move that he did it with, he did it on purpose. But
well,
WWE just released a statement that it's never good, and we apologize that, you know, we're sorry to the family, but the police said it wasn't our fault, so meh, basically.
We say don't try this at home.
Yeah, we say don't try this at home. But that's what I'm saying. The news reports are saying that the kid was like, yeah, so I killed her.
Wow.
Yeah,
well,
that's pretty depth.
Yeah, I didn't know the extent of that. Well,
that's great shit. Let's end the show on that. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I appreciate you, you know, bringing that up so we can go out on a high note.
Hold on, I'll do this. Wait, I'll do this. I can. The Raw rating is up from a 3. It was up to a 3.0. It's up 163,000 viewers from last week. So they're still getting 4 million views a show.
That's good.
There you go. There you go.
I tried.
I do want to bring up the fact that, of course, Heat Wave was this past weekend, and the Elite Eight, in no particular order, are Crazy Ivan, Matt Saigon, Kay Koa of the Flying Hawaiian, Justin America, Mike Reed, O-Dog, LJ Cruz, and Ty Reno. They advance to the next round, which will be at Crowning Glory. You're going to see the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and the finals.
How does it feel to be suspended from something you don't do anymore?
It's a tragedy, Dan.
A tragedy. Aren't you upset and sad about this?
It's an absolute tragedy. Scoop Slam is very near and dear to my heart. And I don't know if I can get over this, Dan.
Hmm.
I just can't say it any better than tragedy.
I'm gonna talk to the board about this.
See if you can get me reinstated to a show that hasn't been recorded since April.
I will do that.
And I hope, above all hope, Dan, that can happen. Also, there is an appearance for New Moon Rising Wrestling at the Audubon Staples. That's coming up Saturday at the Staples in Audubon from 10 to 3. Confirmed to be there, O-Dog, Woot, Woot, Sienna Duvall, Jake Bishop. Thank you. Jake Bishop and a few others. So that is coming up this Saturday at the Staples in Audubon.
That's right off Black Horse Pike.
Yeah, at the Audubon Shopping Center, I believe it's at.
It's
so,
great places to eat nearby, so have something to eat and say hi to your favorite New Moon Rising Wrestling stars.
And perhaps buy a phone.
Buy a phone from a guy named...
The Dean of Credibility.
Yes, please buy a phone. It's how we finance this show.
You can make sure that you will have the best rate plan possible if you... buy a phone
he
from
will,
the Dean of Credibility.
He will get the best rate possible that the corporation allows him to get.
Yes. I am a company man. Well, actually, I usually start with Omega. Omega, where can the fine people find you?
Let's not break tradition. Fine people can find me at Omega Squad on Twitter.
Start from the bottom first.
Shut up.
Stop.
Oh.
He's the MMA and wrestling analyst. He has a very important job here.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, Dan Law 83, where can we find you?
At Dan Colachico. You follow me at Dan Law 83 on Twitter. Where can they find you, Folsom County?
I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility. You can find me at Folsom County. You can follow the blog at HIACTalkRadio.com. You can follow the Twitter at HIACTalkRadio and the Facebook at HIACTalkRadio. Next week, one guest. And it's going to be a biggie. It's Aaron Ganey. I have entitled it The Shoot Series with Aaron Ganey. So,
and this might be 2 weeks, folks.
I think 1 week we should get enough.
I think we should piss everybody off in 1 week.
But until next week, you guys have a great week.
I'm going down to the church house. Get down on my bended knee. Deacon Jones, pray for me. Deacon Jones, please pray for me. Maybe there ain't no hell. Maybe there ain't no hell. Maybe there ain't no heaven, no burning hell. No! I'm going down.